Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the J-Talk Fantasy Show. I'm Ben Maxwell, joined as I was for our first episode by Sam Robson and Alex Bishop. Sam, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me. After maybe 1 or 2 weeks of this, I didn't think I'd get invited back for this, but I've managed to turn things around, so I'm just about on yours and Alex's coattails.
Yeah, you're one of the feel-good stories over the last month in J-League Fantasy, Sam, which is terrific to see. But yes, top of the podcast host pile in this particular episode is Alex, flying high inside the top 10 in J-League Fantasy. Welcome back to the pod, Alex. And we can't wait to dive in and find out how you've done it.
Yeah, pleasure to be here as always. I have to say, I do think I'm on a little bit of borrowed time at the moment in ninth place. There's some pretty tough company at the top of the table, so we'll have to see how it goes.
Yes, so we are 9 match days into the J1 season, which means we're about a quarter of the way through this campaign. The first episode of the J-Talk Fantasy Show was a Patreon exclusive episode, but with no J1 taking place this past weekend, we thought we would the free pod as well this week. We could use the J-Talk Fantasy Show for that, and maybe give our free feed listeners a taste of how it went in the preview episode back before the season began. So we're 9 match days into the season. We're 9 match days into J-League Fantasy. And Alex, we mentioned it off the top. You're inside the top 10. You are ninth, currently 25 points behind the number one, your hero Fraser, who is definitely my hero after his start to the season, being very strong pretty much throughout. So, how have you managed it, Alex? Some of the strategies, some of the key players that have gotten you to where you are?
Yeah, good question, actually. I mean, just kind of like as a general principle, the way I've seen the season go so far as a general trend, I think there's been a lot of points in defense is one thing I've noticed, both clean sheets and attacking returns, those goals and assists that the defenders can get, and I think it's four or five points that they get you if it's a clean sheet. So I've paid attention to that a lot, particularly what are the fixtures, which teams are playing against teams that aren't really scoring many goals, like I don't know, like Fukuoka, for example, loading up on players who are playing that team so I can really maximize points there. Other than that, I mean, I've just been kind of following in the crowd. I think most of us have Peter Utaka at Kyoto, right? He's been banging them in at quite a low price. And then other than that, I've been basically following the fixtures, which teams are in form, which teams aren't in form, targeting the teams that aren't in form, and it seems to have gone okay so far, so long may that continue.
Good stuff. All right, so I currently sit at 12th in the table, and Sam, as I said, you've worked your way up into the top 20 over the past few weeks. Now, Alex references the strength in players from defensive positions, and that's borne out in the leaderboard for the player pool. When you click on transfers, it obviously gives you the list of the highest scoring players thus far. And Alex has mentioned Peter Utaka there, Sam. He is the only forward inside the top 15. And indeed, there's only one midfielder, Mateus Savio, as well, inside the top 15 players on the first page, basically, of players when you click onto transfers. And, astonishingly, Yuto Suzuki from Jubilo Iwata is the highest scoring player in the entire game. And the rest of the top 15 players thus far are all defenders and goalkeepers.
Yeah, we were considering at the start, maybe we thought goalkeepers were overpriced, but you look at it there, there's 7 or 8 of the top 15 are all goalkeepers, so maybe that has played out quite nicely. The last few fixtures have been boring to necessarily to watch, but great for a fantasy perspective if you've got one of those keepers. And yes, a lot of those kind of wing backs, teams that play three at the back, and you've got like Suzuki players right of the right wing back for Jubilo. You've also got Yamane, who's basically a wing back anyway, Ino at Tosu, also wing back. That's a great place. My man Mitsuta, who's listed as a defender despite now playing just behind the striker. So those are the sort of ones you want to get hold of. He has been absolutely vital to my resurgence up the table, Mitsuta. But yeah, it is defence first. I mean, I think that was where I went wrong at the start. I mean, I was very heavily involved in the strikers. They all kind of let me down or got injured. So yeah, I've had to recalibrate my thinking to try and get back into contention. So, but you're doing a lot better than me and have done a bit more consistently. So what has your team been based on?
Yeah, I was fairly early on Utaka, but ISA Ueda, I think I've had him in from the start, and he's done particularly well. I think he's the second highest scoring forward behind Utaka. And yeah, there's definitely been just as many misses as there's been hits in my transfers. But yeah, I'm definitely come around to basically stocking my defense with those players that you've mentioned there, the wing backs, or in the case of Mitsuta, and the players that are simply listed in the wrong position as to where they're playing now. I mean, yeah, Mitsuta's playing out on the wing, and he's listed as a defender, and even at a decent price of 8.25, he is still terrific value for money. So he's come into my team recently, and as has Kosuke Onase as well from Gamba. And taking you behind the curtain, one of my two transfers that I've done today was to get the Kyoto defender Takuya Ogiwara into my team as well. And again, a cut price option at just a 5.25. So yeah, Alex, I think that's something that we can share with the listeners that maybe are new to playing fantasy games, is that trying to target players that are listed in positions listed in defense where they score extra points not only for goals, but of course a big bonus for a clean sheet as well. They can be a key source of points for your team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, anybody, a defender that's playing as a wing back and the team is actually playing with those wing backs bombing up and down the line. In the modern era of football, right, they're very, very, very attacking players, and they're going to be involved in a lot of points. I've been doing that myself. Onose, I've recently brought in. Suzuki, I kind of missed the boat with Suzuki at Jubilo, and I'm not sure he's going to keep this record up, this scoring up. I think he scored almost 50% of their goals, right? So it's quite incredible. And they're not keeping that many clean sheets, but he's an example of one of those players. Mitsuta, that's another one who Sam mentioned. I will be going for him. And I think they're very, very important to have these players. The one risk that we've seen in other leagues, and we don't want to, cross-reference FPL, the Premier League's version, too much, but these players do get rotated a little bit more than other defenders. So you have to kind of bear that risk as well. I don't think Yamane at Kawasaki, he hasn't had too much rotation, right? Even though they've played a lot of games prior to the ACL. But that's one thing you've got to kind of keep an eye on. But with this version, with this with FJL, it doesn't really matter, right? Because whoever we have on our bench comes in automatically and stuff like this. So you can probably, if you've got a good bench, a few options there in defense or in midfield as well, then you can probably kind of absorb that risk. That seems to what's worked well for a lot of players in the top 10 or top 20 of the league, I think, having really good a defense full of wing backs.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we're going to have to reference FPL numerous times in this episode because, I mean, it is it's the most popular fantasy football game in the world. And this game, while it doesn't mirror it, is obviously loosely based on the same concept. So, you choose a total of 15 players that have make up a salary cap, and they score points for you based on what they do on the pitch in a similar sort of setup to FPL. So, Sam, what is the reason you think that there are seven goalkeepers in the top 15 overall scorers in the game, and as we said, only one forward and one listed midfielder? Is it the lack of bonus points? Is it the lack of points for a captain? The points that you earn for a goal position by position is basically the same as FPL, but while Mohamed Salah, Harry Kane, Heung-Min Son, etc. Dominate the FPL points leaderboard. As we've said, there's this FJL leaderboard is littered with defenders and goalkeepers.
Yeah, I'm not massively familiar with actually the FPL one. I haven't played that in many years, but I think the number of the points for every two saves, I think that's pretty vital. I know that Park Il-gyu has been my goalkeeper, and he's got kept a lot of clean sheets, but he is making a number of saves as well. I think Slovic is another one that really benefits from that. And generally, I think this has been a lower scoring J-League to start with. I think we've had quite a few rounds of limited number of goals, and that's brought a lot more clean sheets than you would maybe imagine in this league, and that has benefited the goalkeepers. I do think that over the course of the season that'll balance itself out a little bit, and I think you'll see a few less of these. But yeah, I think maybe that save one is probably the only thing I can see, because otherwise, yeah, I don't know. There doesn't seem like there's that disparity between points for goals for midfielders and forwards. Don't think that is low enough to cause forwards and midfielders not to be higher on the list.
All right, fair enough then. So, yeah, the game itself overall then, Alex, through 9 match days, we've both been in contact with the operator of the game, Mr. Kurosawa, well, several times. For me, mostly in the preseason. I've kind of left him to it once the game has been up and running. And so, yeah, we ended up with 164 players, and obviously some of them have switched off a little bit, and that's natural. That happens in all fantasy games, regardless of the sport. So you could probably scroll your way down the table and kind of work out a rough percentage of how many players are still taking it seriously after 9 match days. But I think, yeah, for a first attempt, having over 160 players in the game, and overall the experience has been a positive one for me, and it's definitely filled a void, and I'm very glad that Mr. Kurosawa put in the hard work he did to get it up and running, and I'm very glad we have it. So what are some of the positives that you've taken out of the first 9 match days, and what do you like about this game?
Right, yeah, I think it kind of filled a void, right? I mean, I was kind of waiting for somebody to come along with something like this, you know, being a big fan of FPL and other fantasy games, and for the J-League to just have nothing was kind of, I always thought it was kind of strange. I heard that there was something in the past, but I'm not too familiar with that. I think it was a bit before my time when I started watching, which was around 2015. But yeah, I mean, there's a few positives, to be fair. I like the kind of, the position flexibility. In FPL, you're restricted. You've got to fill, what is it? I think you need to have 5 defenders. Is it 5 midfielders and then 3 forward and 2 keepers, something like that, right?
That's
yeah.
Right.
In this, you can just do whatever you want, right? As long as you can fill that minimum match day formation criteria. You can have like 1 keeper, 2 keepers, 3 keepers even. You can completely neglect defense as much as possible. I think you only need to have 3 defenders, so you don't have to have a full set of 5 defenders. You can just have 3 and go really big up front if you like to play the game that way and kind of figure out who's going to score the goals, that kind of thing. You can also do the opposite, you know, like what's been the case that's been working well and going big at the back, just stacking up with a couple of cheap centre-backs who are always going to play. And if there's a clean sheet, then great. Or maybe kind of figuring out how to go like cheap up front, get the cheap strikers, which have also been doing well, and then getting really good defenders like Yamane, Morishige at Tokyo, whoever it is. So a lot of flexibility there. I think that's worked quite well. I like the idea of not picking a match day 11 as well, you know, just getting your top scoring players automatically come into your squad. With FPL, if you don't put that player or you don't put a certain player in your starting 11 and he then scores a load of goals or gets a clean sheet, unless one of your starting 11 is missing, then you don't get the points for that player. He stays on your bench and those points just go to waste. In FJL, no, they come into your team and you can you rack up those points on the board. So that's worked well as well. The yellow card thing where, you know, if the player gets booked, I think it's if the player gets booked, gets sent off, scores an own goal or gives away a penalty, maybe. I don't know about the penalty one. I'll have to check that. The fact that if they do any of those actions, they're automatically in your team. I'm kind of still on the fence with that. I think it's kind of funny, because you can kind of, it's a bit of a risk, right? I mean, if you've got a player who's done nothing, he gets booked, he brings someone down on the halfway line after his team's been beating a couple of goals or whatever, then, you know, he's coming into your team and there's nothing you can do. It's kind of funny. It's difficult to predict, though. So that I'm kind of, you know, not decided either way, but it is kind of interesting, I suppose. So there's some of the things I've noticed that have been quite good. The keeper points, it's only 2 points for a save point, right? 2 saves for 1 for one save point. In FPL, it's 3 saves for 1 save point, right? I think that's also good. It puts a new dynamic to the keepers. You need to look into your keepers a little bit more. It's not just about clean sheets. You need to see what keepers are going to be, you know, what whose defense is not so good. How many shots are they stopping on a game by game, that kind of thing. Which opponents are they going to face? And if they're going to face a very strong opponent, are they really going to make the keeper work? In that case, you might look at bringing the keeper in if he's got like a string of maybe difficult fixtures, maybe, you know, depending on how you think things are going to go, because you can rack up a few more points. But yeah, there's definitely a few quirks to it that I think are quite interesting.
Yeah, most definitely. So, Sam, it was a bit of a sluggish start for you. And yeah, as we said, you've worked your way up the table to 17th as we stand after 9 match days. So was that sort of getting your head around the rules, or was that you're just working out which players you wanted in and, yeah, kind of work out the trends of out of position players, et cetera? And also, obviously, along similar lines to my question to Alex, yeah, what have you enjoyed about the game so far? Not just rising up the table, of course.
Well, that's been a big part of it. Yeah. But yeah, I think maybe rustiness, that's what I'm going to put it down to. I definitely picked poorly. I went straight for the wild card after about 3 match days, which is what I usually do in these fantasy games, just completely panic. But yeah, I think I've got a better idea of which sort of players I had to do. No longer relying on your Mutos and your Rara players and all that. They're all letting me down. I put a bit more thought, I think, into it and picked more logically. I've got Kashua players in there. Hiroshima players are playing well. And I just think I've picked better on form rather than just being drawn into names, which is a really poor way to go about it. Yeah, but overall, I've really enjoyed it. I think the main thing for me is you're not punished necessarily for missing a deadline or for like if you don't set your team up correctly, you're not punished as you would be in a different fantasy football life, such as Alex says, the best 11 come in apart from the yellow card. So that really helps. And also these post game week deadlines, post deadlines transfers are vital for me, especially when you've got those Friday games. I'm really busy on a Friday and I'm not really around to sort out my fantasy team. So if I miss that, at least I can have a bailout on the Saturday if I need to, if there's an injured player I need to swap out or if I forgot something. So that's really helped me out. And it's just really like there's very good options. It's very flexible. It's very easy to manipulate and manage your team on it. So, yeah, it's really helped me. I just think, yeah, that start of the season, yeah, maybe it was just rust, but it got rid of those Kobe players, Urawa players and Sapporo players. That's what I kind of based my team on at the start of the season. All three started dreadfully. So, yeah, get rid of those, freshen things up. Big Peter Tucker is leading the line and, yeah, I'm on the charge.
Brilliant stuff. That's a terrific motivational speech there, Sam. Yes, your boys will be pumped to hear that. So, yeah, I've also enjoyed the positional flexibility. Yeah, at different times I've had 6 midfielders. I've only had 1 goalkeeper. Then I've had 6 defenders. It's a real hodgepodge, and you can basically, yeah, completely manage your team in the way you want to. And I've enjoyed digging up these out of position players and getting them into my team, and for the most part, yeah, touch wood, they've done quite well, especially with the massive amounts of clean sheets in match day 9 just finished. So were there any teething problems, guys? Any things that you would like to see improved? For me, I'll go first. There were the much ballyhooed price rises after 6 match days that we talked about on the preview episode. I guess they just came and went without me noticing. I mean, I must admit to not following the Fantasy J-League's Twitter account too closely. So maybe they were outlined there. They were spelled out who was going to rise and fall in price. But otherwise, I haven't really been able to find out the information on what happened there. And similarly, when you click on the transfers page, as I said earlier, you can see the highest scoring players thus far. But it's kind of you're left in the dark about how these players have actually scored their points, because I guess if you select them and put them into your team, regardless whether you save the transfers or not, there is an information button next to the player's price that is you can hover over But when you click on it, nothing happens. So I don't know whether that in time will become a menu where you can see a game by game breakdown of the players' points totals so far. But yeah, for now, we're kind of left in the dark. And yeah, like you can see that, for example, Yuto Suzuki is the highest scoring player, but you don't know a breakdown of maybe of how many points he scored recently in the past few weeks, if you wanted to bring him in or not, or if maybe you think his bubble is bursting and yes, his points total have been lower in the past few weeks, then yeah, there's simply no way to know that. So a couple of things maybe that I'd like to see improved, maybe added to the game, that information button. I think that would be good to get a proper breakdown about how a player's points have been accrued. But as I say, overall the experience has been very positive for me. If I come back to you, Sam, is there any teething problems you've noticed or anything you would like to see improved or added to the game?
Well, yeah, along similar lines to what you were saying there, if you could, when you're searching for players, if you were able to search by goals, by clean sheets, by assists, by last five games, I think that would be something that would be really useful to have in there, because, yeah, the I button doesn't work for me either. And there's one thing with the chips as well. You've got the free hit, the post-deadline, and the post-deadline free hit. And it says that there's out of 12 for all of them. But actually, if you use one of them, it gets rid of all of it. So I'm down to 7 out of 12 for all of those, when, like, it looks to me like I've got 12 free hits, I've got 12 post deadlines and 12 post deadline free hits. So that's not really the case. So that could be, it could do with being clearer. Maybe it is in the rules and I've missed it, in which case that's my fault. But yeah, it's not completely clear to me immediately how many of each of those you've got. But I have to say, Mr. Kurosawa, whenever I've messaged him about various things, there was one instance where I wasn't able to log in and whatnot, but he was very quick to sort things out. So yeah, if anyone has any issues, yeah, message Mr. Kurosawa. He will be very swift and it deals with it very well. So thank you to him.
Yeah, you're spot on. Yeah, in my correspondence with him as well, he's been extremely helpful. He obviously was able to set up the JTalk Fantasy League, our private league, and I should give a shout out to Harry Brooks, who's currently top of that and doing extremely well this season, actually above Alex and inside the top 10 at the moment as well. And he's flying, so that's terrific. Well done, Harry. And so yeah, again, Alex, we've said how great this has been to have as part of the J League landscape, but it's not perfect, is it? I don't think Mr. Kurosawa would suggest that it was either, and there's obviously things that need to be worked on. You can go along with what we've mentioned, or is there any other things that you'd like to see added or improved?
I agree with what you guys said. I actually messaged him recently about I wanted him to kind of see if he could put together like a rankings of goalkeepers, not on points or clean sheets, but of save points. And he mentioned that he couldn't quite get that together yet. So I think a lot of these lack of information, shall we say, lack of functionality with the numbers that we're seeing, that's all going to come in time. That I think it's all kind of very much a fresh project, and maybe next season he'll have the kind of interface and the whole thing looking a little bit better. But yeah, I'd love to have a little bit more information player by player, what kind of where they're up to with the points. This thing with the price rise, right? We're all in the dark. We can kind of fathom a guess as to who's going to go up in price and who's going to go down in price. To put it very simply, it's if you have an expensive player like Damião, who started the game at 12 million, he's going to have to be really, scoring high to justify a price increase, because it's based on the player's price and how many points they're scoring. So if he's really underscoring his price, then he's obviously going to drop down in price. And he did drop down in price. It was very easy because he wasn't even playing. He rotated heavily, right? So we can guess. But other than that, it's a complete stab in the dark. And we really need to kind of know who's going to go up in price, who's going to go down, so we can plan the transfers around it, right? So that one I would definitely second. The other thing, cup competitions, right? So maybe it's still a little bit early for FJL, but maybe in seasons to come, we could have the option to create mini leagues and cup competitions, that kind of thing. I think that would do a lot to, kind of boost popularity and things like that.
Yeah, most definitely. All right. So, again, it's been a terrific experience thus far. And I think we've all enjoyed it. And hopefully you have as well, listeners, if you decided to jump in at the start. I'm don't want to sink the boot in too much, Alex, but your FC Tokyo Kai guys cohort, Thomas, certainly hasn't been pulling up too many trees so far, though, has he in J-League Fantasy? I think I mentioned, 164 players. And, there's well over 150 ahead of Thomas at the moment. So he's found life a little bit difficult in the early stages of the season. But I do have to give him kudos for his recent choice of my boy Fuchi Honda. Thomas, I think you're ahead of the curve on that call, but he's got a lot of work to do, hasn't he, Alex?
Yeah, he's letting us down big time with that. I'm just looking at his team now. He's probably, been waiting for the second half of the season to come back strong. I think just the fact that he's got one, two, three ACL players, four ACL players, I think he's pretty much what we call an inactive player at this point.
Right. Yeah. Actually, I tell you, that was something I was going to move on to next, Alex, that you mentioned the ACL players there. They're, obviously, we've got the four teams away at the moment in Southeast Asia. And listeners, if you're curious, Sam and I will be rounding up what's been going on in the ACL group stage once we're finished with the fantasy show. How many players from ACL teams did you have in your squad in the lead up to the ACL? Did you manage to ship them all out before they departed, and did you have a transfer strategy to ship them out, or you didn't have any other fires to put out in the meantime?
Yeah, that was a bit of a pain in the bum, that one. To start the season, I loaded up on them. I think all of us did, right? I think we all had like Damião, Yamane, and then we had these Kobe players. Because to be fair, I think those of us in the J Talk community, a lot of our decision was based on the J Pred that we do every season. So I had a couple of Kobe players, a couple of Reds players. I think I went triple up on the Marinos attack. So, yeah, I needed to have a big plan to get rid of them. And what I did, it didn't really work to plan because, as you said, there was a few more fires to put out along the way. But I was going to, as we were getting closer, depending on who was playing a difficult fixture and who was playing an easy fixture, I'd gradually get rid of them from, like, if they had a difficult fixture, bye-bye. If it was an easy fixture, I'd keep hold of them. I was kind of tempted by the doubles that we had. I know that you don't get double points for the double game weeks where the teams play, the ACL teams are playing two games, but I always thought that was a good way to get yourself or try and guarantee, a clean sheet if it's a defender, or a goal if it's an attacker, because, it's a double chance to actually do it. In terms of, more defense-minded teams, I don't know if we call Kawasaki a defense-minded team, but they do have a good chance of getting clean sheets. You'd think if they're going to play two games in one match week, then one of those games they're going to keep a clean sheet, right? So it's always worth kind of thinking about that. So I was very enticed by them in the beginning. And then, just gradually I had to get rid of them. But then, of course, other fires come up, injuries come up, players just aren't playing or getting picked for their teams, or they're not firing. So I had to take care of that as well. And even right now, I still have Eibar, I think, at Marinos. So I haven't quite shifted them all on. But the plan now is going to be, how are we going to get them all back in, right? I mean, it's we're going to be faced with a similar kind of problem. But we do have those chips, which not only are they kind of post deadline transfer chips or free hit chips, they're kind of like, you can think of them as like an additional transfer for that week. So if you do want to, well, in the case of before the ACL, you're shipping them out, you can use an extra one of them to ship out another player if you've got too many. Or as we wait for them to come back, which I think is in two game weeks, right, you can use one of them to get them back quicker if you think they have, tasty fixtures and they're going to hit the ground running when they come back. But definitely that's been something that we've had to think of how to navigate.
Yeah, I was dragged in by those double fixtures as well as you were saying. I thought, that's a good chance. But it just didn't work out for me at all. No one was getting any points. I think it was because Reds and Kobe were the ones that I was focusing on, and they weren't playing very well in any of their games. So, all of my ACL players were got rid of in the mass fire sale of week four. They've all gone. There's nobody left in my team at the moment. But, that is the thing about when do you bring them in, because it looks to me, I don't know exactly what the prices were before and after, but it looks like Reds and Kobe players especially have dropped in price. So it looks like there's potential value in some of them. I'm looking at David Moberg at Reds, who started very well when he in the league, getting a few goals. He's scored a few in the ACL as well, so he's one I'm looking at. But I'll be giving a good look at those Kobe and Red Swans. It looks to me on the outside, you might be able to tell me differently, but it does look like across the board they've received price drops.
Yeah, they have. I think Reds, Kobe, and Damião, right? And maybe some of the Kawasaki attackers, Damião. Yamane went up, but specifically the Kobe and Reds. I think most of them, their main players, they've gone down in price. I'm kind of thinking with Kobe, right, now that Lottin has come in, is he going to get them set up to, you know, bed in more and play a little bit more defensive? Because a lot of the guys who are in our league who are like so rare managers, they're not really watching the games, they're looking at a lot of stats. I think they'll be put off quite a bit by, you know, Kobe's form in the league so far. I think anyone would, right, be sitting bottom and stuff. But yeah, I think that could be a good differential when Kobe come back. If you got one or two of their defenders, they play Gamba, Tosu, then they've got Kawasaki, fair enough. And then after that, Shonan, then Jubilo. So it could be, I'm thinking about that. Makino, or I'm not sure exactly who, but getting one or two of their defenders if they're cheap enough, because there could be some clean sheets on the way. But Reds also, right? So that Moberg and Juncker, if he's going to be starting, I think they could also be hot players to pick up.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Carlson's one I've got my eye on once they return from the ACL. But yeah, some of the players that have dropped in price. I mean, Leandro Damião is obviously a popular pick at the start of the season, rightly so. The reigning most valuable player and the Golden Boot winner from last season. He's had the highest price in the game at 12 units, whatever, however you want to slice it. But yeah, he's hasn't started this season in the same form as he obviously played throughout 2021, and that's led to his price dropping, as we've said. I wonder how low he will go before he's, again, a player that a lot of people who currently don't have him will want to jump on. That's one to see. And, yeah, in terms of Kobe, I probably hung on to Gotoku Sakai a little bit too long and now have him out of my team. But as you say, Alex, yeah, Lottina coming in will probably first and foremost look to make them harder to break down. So he might be a player I'll be revisiting in the weeks once Kobe are back in league action. But yeah, Alex, great minds think alike. Elber is still in my team as well. Yeah, he's the last remaining player who is away at the ACL, currently still in my 15. Sam, yeah, we're going to come on to talk about the ACL, you and I, later on. Kobe have hit 6 goals in their most recent game. We're obviously hoping that will be it will spark their confidence and will help to turn around what has been a horrendous season thus far. So yeah, is there a Kobe player or two you've got your eye on and hopefully we'll use the ACL as a springboard to racking up the fantasy points once they're back in J1 action?
Yeah, there are a couple, actually, and especially they've changed the formation as well, so they're now actually using wingers. So I'm thinking Koya Yuruki, who scored 2 goals in that last game. I think he's a decent option. And Yuta Gokay as well, as playing on the right-hand side. Previously, he's been more of a deeper midfielder, so I think his price is going to be pretty nice. And I think if he can get more regular game time on that right wing, I think he's only at 5 at the moment. So I think he's a little bargain pick that could come up good. But yeah, I probably shouldn't have revealed that to everyone. And might be have a rush on that. But yeah, I think Gokay and Yuruki are the two I'm just keeping my eye on. And yeah, I will always be drawn in by Gotoku Sakai.
Yeah, and I tell you what, on a similar vein, Sam, regular listeners will know we basically don't cover the Levain Cup group stage at all on this podcast. But I mean, it is obviously a breeding ground for young stars, and most J1 managers use the competition as a breeding ground for using their entire squad and bring younger players through. So we're one match day away from the conclusion of the group stage. So have there been any maybe youngsters or maybe veterans that weren't getting a run in the first team that have impressed you in the group stage and that might be worth keeping an eye on for fantasy managers moving forward?
Well, I think the one that made his name, and we've already seen him in the league actually, is Nakashima at Consadole. He scored 4 goals already in the Levain Cup. He's joint top scorer, and he's obviously been given his chance in the league, and we've seen that he's quite a dangerous player. He's got good aerial ability, he's got good movement to go along with that, so he's an interesting one. Thankfully, Shun Nagasawa is He's not in this game, but yeah, he's got three as well, so he's done well. And there's some youngsters at Kashiwa as well, with Masukake and Maye and Kato. There's some good players in there. I don't know necessarily if they're ready to make them step up into the first team. Obviously, they've got Hosoya and Douglas and Mateus Savio and Koematsu all playing well. So it's not necessarily that they're going to break in, but I think there are some good young players coming through. Someno, if Kashima get any sort of injury and Someno can come in into that forward area, I think you've got a really good player there as well. But yeah, these might be players where you look at the Levain Cup here and then think, okay, next season these players are the ones that are going to step up. Because yeah, at the moment I don't see too many actually breaking through now, and if we haven't seen them already, as we have done with Nakashima. But yeah, there are very good options there, but it's also a little bit of a dodgy one, because you look at it and Junior Santos is up there, but there's no way I'd be picking him in the league.
yeah, fair enough then. All right, yeah, obviously not so great news for FC Tokyo supporters, Alex. You and I are Gasmen supporters through and through. Yeah, our side has well, officially bound out of contention for the knockout stages of the Levain Cup this past weekend. Although yes, we can see that the new manager Albert certainly hasn't taken the competition especially seriously by the teams he's put out. Yeah, have you been across the Tokyo group stage games, and have any of the fringe players caught your eye perhaps for a spot in your fantasy team down the line?
Yeah, he's not in the game yet, but young Kashif Bangunagande, he, I think it was against Shonan actually, the away leg of that game. He came on. Traditionally, he's a wing back, right? A left wing back by trade. He's been out injured for a little while, so lacking match fitness, but Albert put him on late in the game, not playing in the left wing back position. He was actually playing like a left winger. He took off the left side of the attacker. I forget who it was. I think Mita or someone like this, and played him actually up in attack so he could kind of get some balls into the box. But he was really hugging that byline, really kind of wide, attacking, kind of modern wing back. I think he played him there because he didn't want to risk him playing the actual further back in defense, running up and down the line, risking another injury. He probably didn't have the fitness to run that much in this game, but he was looking really, really sharp, pinpoint crosses, very attacking, cutting inside the box as well. Yeah, he's not in the game yet, but I'll have to start lobbying Kurosawa to get that guy in. He's got no history, right? So this player can't be coming in like expensive, maybe like a 4.25, something like that. Whether he's going to, I think now Tokyo are playing with Ogawa, right? Is the left back. Whether he's going to come straight in for Ogawa, I don't know. But if there was any kind of injury, that would definitely be an interesting one.
Yeah, most definitely. And yeah, we mentioned and given props to Mr. Kurosawa several times on this episode. And I actually I did check out his Twitter feed last week, and I think someone had messaged him to try and get Taika Nakashima from Sapporo into the game. And he said that he usually only adds people once they've made a J1 start, but he would make an exception for Nakashima because he's become quite important with Sapporo coming off the bench. So he is now in the game as of, I think the conclusion of the last round of fixtures. So he doesn't have any points to his name yet, but he is in the game now at 6.25, and he could be a sneaky in for J-League fantasy managers down the line. So I guess as we kind of work our way towards the end of this episode, Alex, maybe for managers who set up a team and might have lost interest somewhat in the run on throughout the season, if they could take stock after 9 match days and decide that they want to give this a proper crack, are there any kind of nuggets of transfer tips or actual gameplay strategy that you could pass on to maybe a manager who wants to have a proper go at this?
Yeah, one thing I hear quite a lot from a lot of the guys in our JTOR community who are supporting various teams across the league. A lot of people say things like, I want to play, but I don't know enough about the other players across the league. I only really know my own team kind of thing. So if they're supporting Gamba, they only really know Gamba. For me, it's Tokyo or whoever it might be, right? But I'd say that if that's the case, then you're probably in quite a better position than a lot of other players, really. Because if you're watching your team very, very closely, whether that's on TV or going to the actual stadium and this kind of thing, you're going to start to see things a lot earlier than most people who are just looking at numbers and things like this or odds from the bookmakers, or maybe they can't watch too closely every single game. For example, I mean, I don't know, Ben, if you watched the Tokyo Nagoya game the other day, but one thing that came quite clear is that Matsuki, right, who's the young kind of box-to-box creative midfielder, he's now on the corners. I think, who was it before then? Ogawa or someone. Tokyo haven't scored a goal from a set piece all season, so a decision was made to put Matsuki on the corners. Mm-hmm. So that's quite important information for fantasy, because if one of those corners goes in, then that's a couple of assist points right there, right? I don't know if he's on the free kicks, but I do think he did take a free kick, so maybe if he's on the long, like the kind of direct free kicks, that's going to help too. And at 4.25, is he 4.5, something like that? That's pretty good. Pretty good price. That's pretty worth it for a guy who's taking the set pieces. So if you are kind of, you know, stuck to one team most of the time, it's definitely a good idea to kind of have a look at who your, you know, what your team's doing. Has there been any kind of change in tactics? Is the number 8 now playing as a number 10 or something like this, right? Is he closer to the points? A lot of people might not pick up on this early. So that's definitely something for players who are kind of casual, you know, just supporting one team. It's a little bit of advice that, you know, I can give them. Another bit of advice is, you know, it's just very basic, really. I mean, Kurosawa, he actually tweets out the win probability tweet before each game week. It shows like what the bookies are saying, which team is going to win, which one's going to lose, the probability of a draw, this kind of thing. It's pretty black and white. You know, if there's a team that has a strong chance of winning, then of course you load up on their attackers. If it's very even, then you might want to dodge players from that game each week, these kind of things, right? So just look at the numbers, look at the clean sheets. We know that Avispa Fukuoka are struggling to score goals. So don't go for their attackers, right? You want to target Avispa Fukuoka for clean sheets. Get, you know, if you're going to bring a defender in for 1 week, or you might want to get two defenders who are playing against Fukuoka because they're not going to score. You know, that's a double clean sheet bonus right there. So these kind of things, you can just play like that. You don't have to be, you know, very, very kind of knowledgeable or watching every single game to kind of join in. The other one is the keeper, the interchanging keepers technique, right? It doesn't get you a lot of points, but this is something we have in FPL, where you would get two keepers, or even in FJL, you can actually have three keepers, although I wouldn't really want to do that. Two keepers, and you look at the fixtures, say, for the next 5 or 6 game weeks. And if, you know, ideally you want one of the keepers has an easy fixture, the other keeper should have a harder fixture. And then that kind of goes vice versa across 5 game weeks. That means that whenever, you know, whoever's playing the easy team, whichever keeper is playing the easier team, there's a much better chance of a clean sheet, right? And then next week it's going to be the opposite. So you're always going to be in the clean sheet points. And the fact that one of the keepers is playing against a difficult team, they have a difficult fixture, it means that they're going to be facing a lot of shots, saving a lot of shots and racking up those save points. So if neither keeper keeps a clean sheet, then you're going to have a couple of save points to fall back on, because in FJL we get a point for every 2 saves, right? So that's a little bit of technique. You might not want to do it now because it'll take you 2 transfers, but especially at the beginning of the season, or when you're on a wild card, or you want to use one of your chips, or you know you're in a little bit of trouble with your keeper, that's something I'd recommend as well.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. That's really helpful, I'm sure, for fantasy managers who might have lost interest after the first couple of weeks, but want to get back in touch with the game and maybe try and do a Sam and work their way up the table. So Sam, I guess we'll leave it there. It's been great catching up with Alex again, and I wish you continued success, but you'll be above me soon, so I'm not really sure I want to do that. But I hope you keep enjoying the game. As you said, you hadn't been playing FPL all that much recently, but I'm glad you've really enjoyed the game and managed to rekindle your enjoyment of fantasy sports.
Oh, definitely. Thank you for that. I'm sure it'll disappear once I try and bring in Kobe and Reds players and it all falls apart again. But yeah, I've enjoyed the little rebuild here, and I hope to be ahead of you both by the time we next talk.
Well, we'll wait and see. Yeah, Alex is setting the bar very high here amongst the three of us, but we'll try and catch him by the time we record our next episode of the J-Talk Fantasy Show. Thanks again for joining us, Alex, and I probably don't need to mention this to the listeners, but we had some technical trouble. We were originally supposed to record last Wednesday. My computer did not want to cooperate, so here we are on Monday night. So thanks for bearing with me last week, and for joining us again tonight, Alex, and imparting some wisdom. It was great to hear from you again.
Oh, lovely to be involved. Thanks again, as always.
All right, terrific stuff from Alex. So, after a quick hit of music, Sam and I will review what's been going on in the past week in the Asian Champions League. Welcome back, and we'll finish this week's episode with a check on the Asian Champions League. Of course, the group stage is happening over in Southeast Asia at the moment, and the four J1 teams involved are all in the thick of things. And Sam, well, things are topsy-turvy, most definitely, because the team that's looking the rosiest at the moment over there is Vissel Kobe.
Yeah, they're definitely benefiting, I think, from the one team leaving. They had a difficult game. I thought the first one against Kitchi, where they didn't play very well, but scraped through with a 2-1 victory. And then, yeah, got a very much a morale-boosting victory over Changhua United in the last game. They won that one 6-0, so they're top of their group. They're playing Changhua as we speak now. I expect them to beat them. And, yeah, they're looking the most comfortable of all the J-League teams, and they'll beat Changhua. They should beat Kitchi as well. I think they'll cruise through, so it's ideal for Lotano. He's got time with his team. They're obviously getting a bit of confidence from these victories against pretty poor teams, it has to be said. But yeah, fair play to them. They are without doubt looking the most likely of the Japanese teams to sail through to the next round.
Yeah, most definitely. So Kobe taking care of business, and short price favorites to top Group J with, one game in progress and then one more game to wrap up their group stage commitments. Elsewhere, Sam, it's been a little bit spotty from the other three Japanese clubs involved. I guess as we work our way up from the bottom with Group J, obviously not the lowest group, but in alphabetical order it is. So up to Group I, Kawasaki currently sit top of the table after four match days. Their latest result was also a resounding victory, a 5-0 over the Malaysian team JDT. It does appear that the prospects of Kawasaki topping the group, bearing in mind, of course, all of the kerfuffle with results against the fourth place team in your group and not being counted due to the withdrawal of the Chinese team in Kobe's group, which leaves a lot of stuff still in the air and makes speculating very hard. But if Kawasaki could beat Ulsan what shapes as the biggest game remaining in their group stage commitments, then that'll go a long way towards them potentially topping their group.
Yeah, if they beat Ulsan, I think they go through as group winners. They've got Guangzhou in the other game. They'd already beaten them 8-0. So I don't think there are any concerns there. That would take them on to what would be 11 points if they beat Ulsan, 14 if they beat Guangzhou. So then that should be pretty easy for them if that happens. But if they don't beat Ulsan, they get dragged into this malaise of who's finishing top, who's finishing second, and are you going to be one of the better second place teams? Because this group, everyone has taken points off each other as those top three, so I don't think the second place team will necessarily have a lot of points going into that second place group as they work it out. So I think it's absolutely vital that Kawasaki top this one, because I think we could be seeing JDT or Ulsan, whoever finishes second or front early, I think they could be one of the teams that drops out, but it is quite speculative at the moment. It's very hard to figure out like second place positions because we don't know who's going to finish bottom of a lot of these groups. So, but yeah, beat Ulsan, then I think Kawasaki will be absolutely fine. But it's such a big game that happens on Wednesday night.
Yeah, most definitely. So all the best to Frontale in that. Up in Group H then, Yokohama F Marinos have just completed the double over Sydney FC, having it far more comfortably on Monday night than they did in the previous game. F Marinos winning the second clash between the two teams 3-0 after jumping into an early lead, going 2-0 up inside the first 12 minutes. Along similar lines to Kawasaki in their clash against Ulsan coming up, Sam. It's a massive one for F Marinos against Junbuk, who defeated F Marinos in their previous meeting in the group stage. So that's it goes without saying that that's a crunch clash. These two are almost certain to finish in the top two though. So it looks like regardless, F Marinos will have enough points even if they do finish second. But they would dearly love to get some revenge over Junbuk, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely, because they played very poorly in that game. I thought Junbuk were much the better side, and generally speaking, Marinos haven't really got going up until tonight in this tournament. They played very well, I thought, for the first half against Sydney, and then they went down to 10 men and still looked the better side after that, after surviving a slightly ropey period into the second half. But yeah, they're growing into the tournament, I think. And again, it's a massive game against John Booker, because you imagine John Booker are currently playing as we record, but you imagine they'll beat HAGL and go above Marinos. So if Marinos then can beat John Book, they'd have a 2-point cushion. They should beat HAGL in the final game in advance. But in, as I was saying with Frontier, I mean, they're in a bit of a more dodgy position going into the second place thing. But if Marinos do finish second, I do think they'll probably have, they should have the points. I think 6 points against Sydney, assuming Sydney finished third, should be just about good enough. But yeah, it's really difficult, and you don't want to think about that. If you're a Marinos, you just want to beat John Book and finish top of that group and yeah, get through, because yeah, it's still a lottery, that second place positions.
Most definitely. Now, no Japanese clubs in Group G, so we'll finish our roundup with Group F, where Urawa Reds currently sit at top of the pile, but this is anyone's group with the two fixtures remaining for all four clubs. The Reds are currently level on points with Daegu and the Lion City Sailors, Sam. And well, yeah, you were mentioning in the green room when you were trying to help me make sense of of all the possible permutations with, yeah, the fourth place team dropping out. That is currently Shandong of China, who have, yeah, taken three beatings, but have managed to draw one game against Lion City. Yeah, it's Lion City that have currently hold the advantage, even though they sit third in the table.
Yeah, to a degree, because that draw that they got with Shandong will be wiped out, and everyone else, Reds and Daegu, would have a victory wiped out. But on the flip side of that, Lion City still have to face Daegu and Reds, while as Reds and Daegu have both got theoretical walkovers against Shandong. So, yeah, you can look at it in a few different ways. And at the moment, it looks quite nice for Reds because they sit on top, but it's slightly false a position because you expect Daegu and Reds, if all goes according to plan for both those teams, you'd expect both of them to win their final two games. So they'd still be level on points. But if it was just those two level on points, Daegu actually have the head-to-head record over Reds after beating them, and one win and one draw against Reds. So if that was the case, Reds would then finish in second place and go back into that lottery. So at the moment, yeah, you would imagine that would be the scenario. But Lion City have proven that they are able to cause a shock. They have beaten Daegu already in this competition, so Reds would hope to finish level on points with Lion City, actually have that head-to-head, because that's where they do have the advantage. But yeah, there are so many permutations going into this, but if it goes as straightforward as it theoretically should on paper, then Reds are going to finish second and then have to cross their fingers.
All right then. So yeah, not only do we have the permutations of the three best second place finishes out of the five East Zone groups making it through to the knockout stages, we also have the fact that in four of the five groups that have four teams in them, yes, that the results against the fourth place finishing team in each group will be wiped off when it comes to deciding the final placings in terms of who finishes first and second, and then who is able to make it through as the three best second place finishers. So huge apologies, listeners, if that's left you slightly more confused than when you began listening to this podcast. But yeah, Sam and I are very much trying to get our heads around it as well. But hopefully we'll have some clarity, and we'll be celebrating four Japanese clubs through to the knockout stage by the time we record our next episode.
Yes, fingers crossed for all of them. Three, I think, are in difficult positions, but yeah, there are some big games coming up in the next few days, and this is where the competition really gets exciting. Kawasaki, Ulsan, and Yokohama, John Book, definitely two games to keep your eye on in the next few days.
Most definitely. Yeah, hopefully the J1 clubs can prove their mettle and, yeah, make it through and make this whole exercise worthwhile. All right, then. So that is it for this episode of the J-Talk podcast, episode 2 of the J-Talk Fantasy Show. Sam and I would once again like to thank Alex Bishop for his time. We'd like to thank all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/JTalkPod. And listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Fantasy Show on the free feed. And as always, we'd like to thank you for listening wherever you are. We'll speak to you again soon. Bye for now.